We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time she will choose life, but they can't do it without your help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside them. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR.
We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to be with you on this live edition of the program. At The Core is the name of the program. The show hosts are Rick Green and myself. I'm Walker Wildman, and I'm glad to be hosting today's program with you. American Family Radio is operating in over 30 states, 160-plus radio signals, and we're also on the internet live streaming the radio network, programming 24/7, 365 at AFR.net and on the AFR app. We also have the video up on all the major show platforms, Facebook, YouTube, etc. Just type in At the Core or American Family Radio on all the various platforms, and you can find our app, find our show, find our social pages, etc. And lastly, as I remind our audience each and every day, if you would subscribe to the podcast, that would be greatly appreciated. Just type in the name of the show, At the Core, in your podcast library, and our show will be queued up each and every day for you to listen to, for you to share with family and friends, et cetera, et cetera. Well, let's turn our attention to the scripture, and then we'll get into some of our stories for today. Acts chapter 14 is where we are this week. I'm reading here verses 1 through 7. Acts chapter 14. Now it happened in Iconium that they went together to the synagogue of the Jews, and so spoke that a great multitude of both Jews and Greeks believed. But the unbelieving Jews stirred up the Gentiles and poisoned their minds against the brethren. Therefore, they stayed there a long time, speaking boldly in the Lord, who was bearing witness to the word of his grace, granting signs and wonders to be done by their hands. Verse 4. But the multitude of the city was divided, part sided with the Jews and part sided with the apostles. And when a violent attempt was made by both the Gentiles and the Jews with their rulers to abuse and stone them, they became aware of it and fled to Lystra and Derbe, cities of Lycaonia, and to the surrounding region, and they were preaching the gospel there. This is a lot of content, 7 verses, Acts chapter 14. But what I want to highlight is that when the apostles were sought after, they were obviously being threatened with their lives, etc. They fled, but listen to what they did when they came to their next destination. Quote, verse 7, quote, and they were preaching the gospel there, end quote. And so while the apostles fled, while the early church was being chased out of the cities and the synagogues based on preaching the gospel of Christ, they might have been relocated, but they were undeterred in that they continued preaching the gospel. That's according to Acts chapter 14, verse 7 specifically. Well, Pastor Bert Harper, we had him on the show last week. They're going to be having a fishbowl retreat. This is their annual fishbowl retreat for pastors and their wives. This will be hosted by Brother Bert Harper, Pastor Bert Harper, and his wife Jan. They're going to be hosting this in late October, well, the third week of October. October 20th through the 22nd is the date. That's going to be at Pickwick Landing State Park. So if you're a pastor and you want to go to this conference, we would encourage you to do so. If you would like to send your pastor to this conference, that is what we prefer, is to have churches get together and send their pastors to this retreat. It's going to be October 20th through the 22nd at Pickwick Landing State Park. That's in Counts, Tennessee. J.J. Jasper will be there. Brother Bert and Jan Harper will be there as well. And you can go to repairingthefoundations.net, repairingthefoundations.net, to find out more information and register. We would love to see you there. Let's turn our attention to the news stories of the week while we have time. And we do have a guest in the third. We'll be talking housing market, economy, and where things are on that front. But nonetheless, last week, we played clips of this rise of the Democrat Socialist of America and their really takeover of the Democrat Party that has happened. Well, part of this kind of movement and this element is Mayor Mamdani of New York City. Now, he's been I've played clips of him platforming these socialists, and he's even bragging about these government-run grocery stores in New York City that they're spending $30 million a pop on just to get them up and running. And he claims they're going to be 30% below, your competitors. And this is, mark my word, this is going to be a disaster. Government-run grocery store? Are you kidding me? They can't even run the DMV. They're going to run a grocery store? We've got to hammer this home in the mind of the American people that these ideas don't work. They've been tested, they've been tried, and they don't work. Socialism and communism do not work. They are failed experiments in human history. Not only are they unbiblical, we could have told you they're not going to work by reading the scripture, but in practice, they don't work. They've been tried, they don't work. They lead to massive amounts of human suffering and death. That's the history of socialism and communism. Nonetheless, Mayor Mamdani doesn't care about that. He doesn't want to read the history books. He doesn't want to be a student of history. Instead, he just wants to blame the Jews, blame Israel, and blame Bibi Netanyahu for everything. And so this is Mayor Mamdani spending time out of his day in recent weeks talking about how it's his goal, if possible, to charge and arrest Bibi Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, for being a quote-unquote war criminal. That's the accusation of Mamdani. Clip one, let's listen.
Benjamin Netanyahu is a war criminal, the architect of a horrific genocide against the Palestinian people. He is responsible for the killing of more than 73,000 people, for the maiming of tens of thousands of children, as those who survive undergo amputation without anesthesia, for the targeting of neonatal hospitals and maternity care centers, denying newborns even the chance to live, for the countless people he starved as he blocked food and humanitarian aid from reaching them, for the gunning down of hundreds of aid workers and journalists. And just last month, the UN confirmed that Palestinian children continue to be deliberately targeted and killed by Israeli armed forces, more than 8 months after the so-called ceasefire. The list goes on and on, all as we, as Americans, pay for the bombs that do the killing. There is a reason the International Criminal Court issued a warrant for his arrest. As human beings, we have spent generations building a shared understanding that there are crimes so grave, they offend all of humanity. Anyone, with their eyes, with their heart, with their conscience, should recognize the devastation he has wrought and understand that he belongs before a court of law. As I've said, I agree with the ICC that Benjamin Netanyahu should be arrested and tried for his crimes, as I do for anyone else charged by the ICC. My administration has reviewed every avenue available under applicable law to determine whether New York City could execute the International Criminal Court's arrest warrant if Benjamin Netanyahu came here. It is clear that we do not have the independent legal authority to enforce this warrant. The federal government, however, does, and I call on them to join the ICC and execute this warrant. And I want to be equally clear. Benjamin Netanyahu is not welcome in New York City, nor is any other war criminal at large. While we cannot end the genocide on our own, we can decide whether our silence will become another weapon, and we can examine every tool we have to defend the humanity and dignity of all people. That is my commitment to you.
All right, so let's pick this apart, okay? And I hate to give credence to unfounded accusations, but for the sake of information and debate, let's do it. The accusation that Bibi Netanyahu is responsible for genocide is unfounded, okay? But let's break apart what we know, and let's not try to be naive either about the effects of war. All right, so first off, Hamas started the war, okay? That's a fact. An undisputed fact is that Hamas thought it was a great idea, which is a proxy of Iran, by the way, let's remember. Hamas, which is run by Muslims in Islam, they thought it would be a great idea to murder, rape, and pillage thousands of Israeli civilians on October 7th. That was their idea. That's what they thought was a good idea. So they did it. Hamas invaded southern Israel, and they raped, pillaged, burned alive, and murdered thousands of Israelis, okay? Civilians, by the way. So that's how this started, and we can't forget that, all right? So Hamas started this, and Israel is finishing it, all right? Now, to what Israel has done militarily in response has been devastating. It's been devastating from a infrastructure standpoint and from a humanitarian standpoint in Gaza. But that's not the responsibility of Israel. And let me explain why. Okay. One of the things that Muslims do, this sect of Muslims that run Hamas and run Iran and Hezbollah, etc. Let me explain what these jihadis do. Number one, this ideology doesn't believe in the sanctity of life or the human dignity, that we're all created in the image of God and we're, you know, have certain inalienable rights and protections and precepts like that. They don't believe in that, okay? And their false religion provides a lot of justification for actually using innocent civilians as shields, as human shields. And so that's what Hamas has been doing. They've been hiding under hospitals, under schools, under houses, okay? And so Israel, Israel goes out of their way, by the way, to avoid humanitarian problems. They are under strict scrutiny by the world and the U.S. And so Israel goes out of their way to issue leaflets, messages, notes, etc., to urge civilians to flee when they're taking military action. But what does Hamas do? Well, Hamas holds the civilians hostage. And occasionally, civilians are implicated in the carnage of war. And it's a very sad and tragic thing, and I'm not trying to make light of this or act like it's not a problem, etc. What I'm just telling you is that war is a dirty business. War is nasty. It's in some ways evil. It's just terrible. And that's what Israel is engaged in. They're engaged in a war against people who have no standards. And they use thousands of civilians, men, women, and children, as human shields, as Israel is trying to kill Hamas. And so there's no doubt there's been carnage in Gaza. There's been civilian casualties in Gaza. Number one, the number you get from Hamas is completely unbelievable. You cannot believe a word that comes out of their mouth. They are liars, they are cheaters, and they are frauds. And their false religion justifies it. And this is what they're known for. For hundreds of years, this sect of Muslims has raped, pillaged, and destroyed everything they've touched. This is what they do. And so to say that, you know, Israel is responsible or Netanyahu is personally responsible for 70,000 civilian deaths, no. I wouldn't believe that number if you gave me $1 million. That number is coming straight from the mouth of Hamas. And so this notion that Bibi Netanyahu and the Israeli government, that they wake up and they go to bed and all they think about is how many innocent civilians they can kill with the military, is completely not true. It's unfounded. There's no facts to back that up. But they keep throwing it out there because it's a anti-Semitic trope that gathers the most radical elements of all political parties together so they can blame the Jews for everything. That's what this is all about. It's very satanic. It's very evil. We'll be back in a few.
America's 250th birthday. It's a great excuse to have some extra cake and ice cream, but we can help your celebration go well beyond that. Show your patriotism with America 250 apparel that will become a memento of this special year. We also have special episodes on AFA Stream to help underscore that America is a Christian nation and help you find God in the Constitution. Find all of this and more in one place. afa.net/topics/250.
At the Core podcasts are available at afr.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Well, if you didn't believe that the Democrats were in trouble, well, this number will surely get your attention. And by the way, last week on Friday, I talked about how the Democrats are having trouble raising money this election cycle. Why? Because they're anti-capitalist. And what do you do if... who do you raise money from if you're anti-capitalist? Because it's the capitalist entrepreneurs and business owners and productive people in society that have the cash. They've got the money to donate to the campaigns. But the Democrats spend all their time demonizing them. So I wouldn't give them money. And your very well-known million and billionaires that are traditionally liberal in their politics, they're not donating to the Democrats because they don't want their tax rate going up to 70%, 80%, capital gains tax, everything tax, tax on this, tax on that. It's just a sheer head-on collision that you're having here with the socialist and then trying to raise money using a capitalist system of campaigning and raising money to win elections. With that being said, the Democrats are entering this upcoming quarter with they're in the red, so to speak, from an accounting perspective. So listen to this. This is according to Fox News, a late report this weekend. Federal Election Commission filings showed the DNC ended June with $16 million in cash and $18 million in debts, leaving a liability of $2 million above its reserves. On the other hand, the Republican National Committee, by comparison, reported approximately $128 million on hand and no outstanding debt. So the RNC has $130 million. The DNC is $2 million in the red. And the DNC also, you guys aren't going to believe this, but it's true. The DNC has an open line of credit on their headquarters, so they can keep the lights on. This is no joke. The DNC has a line of credit out on their headquarters so they can get cash to run on. They've got a $15 million line of credit opened on their own headquarters so that they can keep the lights on and keep the paychecks going. So this is just unlike anything I've ever seen. But when you run on an anti-America agenda in America, and then you have trouble getting people to support you, you know, can't be surprised about that. That's for sure. Well, speaking of the Democrats, they are just giving us a gold mine of information and evidence of how un-American they actually are. The Democrat Socialist of America co-chair was actually on with Shannon Bream on Fox this weekend. And she's once again saying the quiet part out loud. This is going to be DSA co-chair Megan Romer about all of the constitutionally authorized agencies and branches of government that they want to just light a fire to. Let's listen.
So So we're going to put up on the screen a few of the things that are part of your platform. And I want to ask you, just give me sort of a true or false on these. Abolish the Senate.
True.
Okay. Replace the presidency and Supreme Court as we now know them.
Yep.
Abolish ICE.
Absolutely.
Abolish borders and give amnesty to anyone currently in the U.S. illegally.
As a long-term plan, yep.
Defund the Pentagon.
Absolutely.
Abolish prisons, at least in large part.
Yeah, again, that as part of a long-term program, yeah.
Okay, so no prisons. Government or public ownership of most large corporations.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ouch. I mean, they are giving the Republicans so much ammo here, so much political ammo. If I'm the RNC, I'm giddy right now. I'm giddy. I'm sitting on $130 million cash. DNC's running a $2 million deficit, getting out a loan on their headquarters so they can pay the bills, and they can't get these socialists off the television. Schumer's not doing interviews. Pelosi's not doing interviews. Barack Obama, we don't know where he is. And they're sending out the Democrat socialist. I mean, this is just baffling to me. And this is why I'm not sold on this narrative of the Democrats are going to take over the House in November. I don't know. They may. Historically speaking, they probably will. But at this rate, they're sure making it hard on themselves. The way they're talking, the way they're acting, and the failure to raise funds to run an effective political campaign in America 2026. And this is no outlier. Got a clip here. The gifts just keep on giving. This is a New Jersey House candidate sitting down for some coffee talking about how, you know, health care is a human right, they say, and I'll actually debunk that after the clip. Health care is a human right, and we ought not have, you know, this free market thinking when it comes to health care. Food, shelter, and medical care ought to all be socialized. Let's listen.
Should medical care, which is really a human right, and health care, be left to the free market where people who can't afford it or don't have that access to capital be left out of that system? This is not a place where we should have a free market. We should be able to provide for those that need, for the sick and the needy. It's a market failure, and it's also a government failure. I mean, this is what government exists for, right? It's supposed to be able to take care and serve its people. And what are some of the basic needs? Well, you know, it's food, shelter, and like medical care.
So this notion, by the way, and they could just get away with it. Just get away with it. I wish we need more debates where we can refute these assertions. But let's do it now. So this notion that healthcare is a quote human right is just fundamentally not true. And you guys may cringe at this. Whatever. It's just a fact. Healthcare is not a quote human right. Find anywhere in the Bible and in the Constitution where healthcare is a quote-unquote human right. Now, healthcare is good, don't get me wrong. Caring for the needy, the church, you know, meeting the needs, physical, mental, etc., spiritual, let's not leave that one out, of fellow man is a noble thing to do. So healthcare in and of itself is a very virtuous thing. Caring for people in need broadly is a biblical precept. That's not groundbreaking. That's not up for debate theologically. These are just fundamental precepts based on God's character. So health care and caring for the sick is a good thing. This is why, you know, a lot of your hospital systems, your private ones, are run by Christian charities. But the notion and the assertion that it's a, quote, human right, which means it ought to be provided by the government and protected by the government, is just fundamentally not true. And let's also, let's address this angle of provided by the government or protected by the government, because that's important too, okay? Because the socialists always talk about what the government ought, well, the government ought to do this and the government ought to do that. Well, no, the government should protect life, liberty, and property. the government ought to ensure that if you have the ability, that if someone wants to set up a hospital, that they have the right, the constitutional right, for free enterprise, for freedom of association. So the government protecting rights and the government providing goods and services are two whole different things here. One's socialism and one's free market capitalism, and one's constitutional and one's not. And so but they commingle all these words and sentences and their positions, they commingle all of them where we're all confused on what exactly are we debating here. Is this socialized medicine, or is this ensuring that if a hospital system wants to be established and to serve the community, they have the right to do that? Because obviously that's right, that's virtuous, that's noble, that's true. But the government forcing private medical systems to provide services to anybody and everybody, that's not the role of government here. And so it's a very uneducated view of government, a very uneducated view of the free market. And without a doubt, 100% of the time that the government steps into something that has historically been a private party matter, such as healthcare, it always is worsened. The problem is always exacerbated. And this is the fundamental problem with the government in New York setting up grocery stores. Okay, first off, biblically speaking, it's not the civil government's job to hand out groceries. It's just not. Constitutionally speaking, it's not the civil government's job. Nowhere in the Constitution does it say that New York City needs to set up government-run grocery stores. Nowhere. And this is where you need to take the strict interpretation of the Constitution that if it's not explicitly, congressionally, or constitutionally authorized, it shouldn't exist for government. But these are the folks that are running the Democrat Party. And now to compare where they've come from, the people like, I was listening to an interview with Elon Musk, and this interviewer was saying, oh, you're anti-immigrant, you're anti-Muslim, and all this, you know, this stuff we just roll our eyes at. Their questions are full of accusations. And Elon Musk is like, look, if whatever you want to call it, but I'm in favor of secure borders and safe cities. So whatever you want to call that, it doesn't really matter to me. I'm just telling you what my position is. But President Trump has been running on this secure border since 2015, 2016, and he's been labeled everything under the sun. And people have tried to take his life. Oh, you're anti-immigrant, you're anti-American, you're anti-democratic, you want to be a king, blah, 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 blah. They throw out all these accusations, unfounded accusations. But when you look at our positions today, I love looking at these memes on social media. And the Republican / conservative position has virtually stayed the same. We've actually, in some ways, regressed and moderated in a negative way, or become more, quote, progressive, if you will. But Republican and conservative positions on policy has virtually remained unchanged. You know, secure border, free market system, protect individual rights and property, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of our founding ideals espoused by the Republican and conservative movement virtually stayed unchanged with the exception of a few issues. But the Democrats here, if you're looking, watching on video, they've gone way off the deep end. Like, we're having trouble keeping them in the frame. We're using like an extra wide lens here to keep them in the frame. And you have trouble like describing their political positions because you say like, oh, they're left wing. Oh, no, they're left wing. And then what, you know, at some point, what do you call that? I don't know. We'll figure that out. But listen to President Obama. This is in 2005, U.S. Senator Barack Obama talking about, we got to be strong on illegal immigration. We got to have a strong, secure border. This is President Obama, circa 2005, U.S. Senator.
We all agree on the need to better secure the border and to punish employers who choose to hire illegal immigrants. We are a generous and welcoming people here in the United States, but those who enter the country illegally and those who employ them disrespect the rule of law, and they are showing disregard for those who are following the law. We simply cannot allow people to pour into the United States undetected, undocumented, unchecked, and circumventing the line of people who are waiting patiently, diligently, and lawfully to become immigrants in this country.
Where did he go? I want Obama to come back from 2005. We cannot allow people to cross our border illegally. It's disrespectful, Obama says. Let's listen to a President Clinton campaign ad in 1996 on a tough border and mass deportations. Clinton is bragging about here. Clip three.
President Clinton doubled border agents, 1,000 more for California, signed a tough anti-illegal immigration law protecting U.S. workers, 160,000 illegal immigrants and criminals deported, a record. Bob Dole voted against reimbursing California for jailing illegal immigrants. Time magazine says his risky tax scheme could cut 2,000 border agents, cut 4,000 FBI. Bob Dole, wrong in the past, wrong for our future.
This is so good. I love going back to the old nostalgia of common sense. There you have a Bill Clinton campaign ad in 1986 bragging about strong borders, sent 1,000 customs agents to California and deported 160,000 illegal immigrants, most on record. Bill Clinton was bragging about as president running for re-election. What a beauty. What a absolute beauty. So these assertions that you know, I'm on the fringe right, the radical right, you know, a Christian nationalist, all these loaded terms that they throw out at us, it's just a bunch of falsehoods and it's a bunch of straw men. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, for you and I who love American history, who, you know, agree with the founding fathers and the reasons that they constituted this land and this government and this country, for most of us out there with our head on right still, our views virtually don't change on these issues. Maybe every once in a while, but in large part, the main thing is the main thing, whether it's individual liberty, Second Amendment, freedom of religion, you know, smaller government, less deficit, less debt, basically less government everything, strong military, strong alliances with Israel. These various political positions and policy positions conservatives have held for decades and decades and decades, and we're still standing here with the same viewpoints, and we're getting called the radicals in the political movement. No, it's the Democrats. They're the radicals.
Every day, AFA offers biblical insight on issues that others aren't willing to touch in the hopes that you'll become a world changer. That's why we're offering an in-depth worldview training course called Activate. 13 different professors teaching 18 sessions, all available online, including a printed workbook to help you apply what you've learned and one-year access to AFA streaming content to give you even more resources. Find out more about Activate and sign up today at activate.afa.net.
In many ways, abortion was on the ballot this past election, and there's reason for concern. There are many counties, cities, and states who have radicalized abortion, and thousands of tiny babies will continue to lose their lives every day. Which is why the Ministry of Preborn is on the front lines for at-risk babies and mothers with unplanned pregnancies. Preborn sponsors clinics positioned in the highest abortion areas in the country by providing them with resources that they need to rescue babies. Preborn continues to expand their life-affirming care. Their end-of-year goal is to equip 10 more clinics with ultrasound machines. These life-saving machines cost $15,000 each, more than most clinics can afford. When a woman meets her baby on ultrasound, she is twice as likely to choose life. And when she comes to a preborn clinic, she will also be embraced with God's love. $28 sponsors one ultrasound, and now through a match, your gift is doubled. How many babies can you save? Please donate. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say the keyword baby. Or you can go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible, and Preborn has a 4-star charity rating.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here with you. Glad to have you on the program. Well, if you listen to certain media heads and certain outlets and, you know, social media trends, you would have thought over the past 4 to 5 years that there's a looming recession, that the stock market's in a bubble, that the housing market's going to crash. You get all these varying narratives out there of the doom and gloom, of which only a very small fraction is ever true. But nonetheless, I wanted to talk about this economy that we're in, the housing market, and some things along that line with Mark Manella with Financial Issues. He's the host of Financial Issues and is with us now. This is the former Dan Celia's organization that he founded that aired on AFR for years and years and years. So we have a close friendship with the Financial Issues team, and Mark is now hosting the program, Financial Issues program, and he's with us now. Mark, welcome to The Core.
Walker, honored. Thanks for having me.
Well, Mark, before we jump in, tell our folks when your Financial Issues program airs and a couple of the ways that they can keep up with it.
Sure. Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. till 10 a.m. On financialissues.org or one of the 500 radio stations or television stations across the U.S., you can catch us live. And if you go out to the website, thefinancialissues.org, you can get in on the chat. Of course, anybody can call in. We're live, so we actually answer stewardship, financial questions, investment questions. We're, obviously one of the big things we really want people to understand is what they invest in actually gears this country's direction. That as a steward, you actually have a responsibility and an opportunity to invest with biblical integrity.
Mm. Well, once again, we're talking to Mark Manella of Financial Issues. And Mark, let's talk about the housing market. So ever since the post-COVID housing boom, if you will, as far as valuations goes, has not really let up. I mean, there have been some periods of easing, if you will, on housing values, on home purchase values, et cetera. But for the most part, there hasn't been much of a correction or much of a drop or anything drastic on that front. So you see home prices continue to gain value. Talk about that, and if you think, you know, a correction is on the horizon, or if this is the quote new normal as far as these very generous home valuations.
Very generous. That's a nice way to say it. Yeah. when you get as old as me, you realize that housing seems to always go up and seldom, if ever, comes down. And if it does, it's just for a short period. But that's not what the issue really is here, because there's something everybody forgets, and that's called real wage growth. And as you know, Walker, real wage growth is how much more does the average household bring in on an annual basis than inflation takes away. So if inflation's 3.5 and you have a real wage growth that says 1.8, that means the average house has, the income has gone up 1.8% more than the inflation did. Well, what we've seen with housing, that article that you said I responded to, that was, I think that was more of a hit piece than anything else to confuse people and to divide people. If they can keep the average person in America to feel like they're being taken advantage of or divided against everybody else, they can move in, and sooner or later, socialism and communism starts taking over. I mean, that's the bottom line on it. So instead of that, let's look at the real numbers. And the real numbers they used in that article said that housing went up June over May, and sales in houses went down June over May. But the reality is, year over year, if you look at the bigger picture, housing was up. Mortgage rates were down. Even with even with what, everything going on with Iran war and the oil and the everybody attacking this administration and trying to destroy it, we even saw real wage growth over housing costs rise over housing costs. So effectively, the cost of a house for the average household went down over the last year. But nobody's reporting that. And you and I know why, and I think probably most of your listeners do, because you bring it to them all the time, what's going on, how no matter what this administration does, it just they just knock it down more and more and more. So in reality, we've seen the pricing of housing go up, but we've also seen real wage growth supersede that.
Yeah, another narrative out there is that, well, young people can't get into houses. They can't get into home ownership. And one thing I do want to, you know, make clear is that the market is nowhere near what it was pre-COVID. I mean, there's just, and will it ever, quote, go back to pre-COVID levels? I don't know. Maybe not. Probably not. Will we ever have, you know, 2.75 mortgages? I don't know. I mean, I'm not a fan of saying never, so we could in the future, but not anytime soon. But with that being true, that this is not the economy of 2018 or 2019, there are still plenty of opportunities for young people to get ahead, to get into home ownership. But there's this narrative out there, well, young people just can't get into homes, and it creates kind of this victimhood mentality of, well, we need government. Government's got to come in and fix this, or we need to regulate.
We need Big Brother to help us, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so talk about how young people actually can get into homes. They've just got to be smart with their money. They've got to figure out a way to set aside some for a down payment. All of these things are within reach. You just got to work for it.
Yeah, and well, it depends on what you're calling in reach, because what they're reaching for may be part of the issue. What I looked up some numbers, and what I found was an expectation creep, where these young men and women getting out of college immediately want the three-car garage, four-bedroom, four-bath, story and a half on 3 acres in one of the luxury areas of their city. And that took me and my wife 35, 40 years to get to there. You know, we started off with a house that cost us $60,000 and then moved to another house. And slowly, you know, things change over time. You build to that. So we can have that expectations creep, which is not only, it's not just their fault for expecting that, but they're being told they should expect that. You got a degree. You should be earning enough money to have what your parents had after 35 years of working. Well, let's lay that aside. Getting in a house is easier than ever in my lifetime right now. If you go for a house in a reasonable price range for your income, there are better loans, there are easier loans. It's so much easier to get out. There's so many opportunities out there to get into a house. You just have to make it within your income level. That's the bottom line on it. So you don't get your forever home. Well, you probably don't even have your forever job right now. Yeah. You're in a stepping stone. Think of it like this. As a steward, what you have is you start where God has you. You do the best with what he's given you there, and then you step up to the next. I can't think of a single friend of mine who bought their forever home right out of college.
No.
Or even 5 years or 10 years out of college. So that expectation creep has caused a lot of problems. That expectation creep has come from the division that's being laid on the American family to believe that every child deserves a middle-class, mid-level house right off the bat, and that everybody deserves. But you and I know that's not true. It's a stepping stone, just like building a business. You know, believe it or not, Amazon was not always as big as Amazon is today. I remember when they were just a book wholesaler, that you could go online and buy books on it, and that was it. You know, and they started off before that as a single little store. Mm. So, you know, everything grows, and patience and understanding is very important. So you bring up the family and younger you know, college age or just after college, people wanting to get a home, it's easier than ever. I really believe that's true. I've seen all the things out there, and everybody I know who wants a home really can find one if they want one. Hmm. I'm not saying that we have enough starter homes, because that's probably the weakest area. But what we've seen with this administration is they've started creating plans to make that so. For example, the road to housing plan that Trump just signed in and got running, it stopped corporations from buying up single family homes, usually starter homes, and turning them into rentals. So it's going to allow more supply. We also seen with what's happening with the exporting of illegal aliens is we're seeing more homes open up there as well. There's a lot going on. And mortgage rates at 6%. During my lifetime, I would have cried with happiness to have a 6% mortgage at one time. Mortgage rates hit 12, 13, 14% if we're looking at them. And the average, for me, the average mortgage rate was 8%. So it's just what you're accustomed to, I guess. And yeah, we grew greatly during those times.
Yeah, the mortgage rates, the only time they're a problem is when you have these insane valuations on these homes. That's when your mortgage rate starts to eat at you. But historically speaking, 6 or 7% is not really that big of a deal. But of course, when you're sitting, if you're the person sitting on 3%, you know, they're loving it. Right. But to your point, there's the first time home buyer programs out there where you need minimum down payment, I think 3 or 3.5% cash. But the expectations was that really hit home with me, because you're so right. You do have people that are fresh out of college in their 20s, early 30s, and you know they're trying to get the $500,000 or $600,000 house in their quote forever neighborhood, and that's just not where you start. I mean, my wife and I started out renting for a year. Then we bought a small zero lot, you know, 1,700 square foot home. And so you kind of work into that. And then once you get into home ownership, you rarely hear of people going from ownership to renting. Once you get into the home ownership, build a little bit of equity and move around, you typically stay in it. So it's one of those things, once you can just get past that barrier of home ownership, you know, most people for the rest of their career stay in ownership, which is a good way to grow your wealth.
Absolutely. Ownership is the key to wealth. That's always been the bottom line. Owning and then letting that grow. A lot of people don't know it, but there's organic inflation, and then there's what I call fake inflation or imposed inflation. Imposed inflation is what the Federal Reserve does to us. They say they want to keep inflation around 2%. You know, that's what they used to say. Now they're saying 2.5%. Well, think about this. What they're saying is we're going to keep pumping enough money into the economy so there's enough dollars to cause everything to continue to rise in price at 2.5% per year. That alone forces real estate and things that can't, you know, like dirt. They're not making any more dirt. So that's going to go up 2.5% every year, no matter what. So you're always going to be seeing inflation go up on that. And as such, the pricing is going to go up. Well, if you own the dirt, your pricing is going up with it. If you own it in a popular area, it's going to go up faster. So ownership is a key, like you said, Walker. Mm-hmm. You nailed that. For everybody, for every household, it's best to own if you can.
Absolutely. Almost always. Absolutely. We're talking to Mark Minella, host of Financial Issues with Financial Issues Stewardship Ministries. Hey, Mark, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for your insight, and hopefully we'll have you back soon.
Well, thank you, Walker. It's been an honor. I appreciate it. Keep up the good work. We need you out there.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it. That's Mark Minella, host of Financial Issues Program, and they've got their podcast out there on all the major podcast platforms as well. You know, another factor into the home ownership dilemma is where some of these people are trying to move or buy in. And for example, if you're a first-time home buyer and you're trying to move to Nashville, good luck with that. I mean, that's not the market you want to go into for your first-time ownership. And there's all kinds of different reports out there and studies that I'll see on CNBC on occasion, but and on Fox Business. But, you know, there's some very affordable parts of the country, especially in this remote work environment that we live in, where, you know, you got upwards of 40% of people that are able to work from anywhere on their computer. And there's a lot of affordable markets around the country that would be a great place to buy your first home where the valuations are somewhat sane. But if you're trying to buy in New York, Washington, D.C., Miami, Nashville, Dallas, you're shooting yourself in the foot before you even, you know, start looking at houses and options. And that's why a lot of those people end up renting in those markets anyway. So a lot of good advice there from Mark Manella with Financial Issues. You know, taper your expectations. Don't try to buy your, quote, forever home as your first home. And learn that it takes time. It takes years to build wealth. And it takes some people 30 years to build what's their, quote, dream home. We'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.